I'm Karen Hart Glass, and it's time for It's All About Food. And it's another hour to tune in love. That's what we like to do here. We like to tune in love. So all of us together, let's put that love out there into the world, because what the world needs now, I hate to be cliche, is love, sweet love. Because the more we put love out there, we get it back tenfold, a hundredfold. And it's hard to do, but we're going to do it now in this next hour. And love with food, of course, because it's all about food. And that's one of the best ways to express love, by giving healthy, delicious, compassionate, cruelty-free, environmentally friendly food to others. Now, before I introduce my first guest, I wanted to bring up a few things. Number one, I've been talking about the Food Revolution Summit, and it's from April 30th to May 8th. I am very honored to be a part of it, in that every day during the summit, I will be introducing a new recipe. And I've mentioned this before, that you can register by going to responsibleeatingandliving.com. Well, I just discovered yesterday that the links were broken. How come nobody told me? So for those of you who did visit responsibleeatingandliving.com, if you found a way to register on your own, great. If you haven't, you can return, because the links are now operational. And please, if you find something on the site, responsibleeatingandliving.com, if there's a link that doesn't go to the right place, if something isn't quite right, let me know at info@realmeals.org. We're working together to make this planet a better place. And I'm not perfect. And I make mistakes. I often do too much in a short amount of time, and things sometimes get sloppy, and I can't stand that. Help me out. I'd appreciate it. And I appreciate those who do bring things up. Sometimes somebody brings up a spelling mistake or something else. Whatever it is, I don't care. Just let me know so we can make everything better. The other thing is, we started this a few weeks ago, and that is, I welcome phone calls during the program. You can call in at 1-888-874-4888 with any food-related question. Hey, if you have another question, we'll hear it and see if it's appropriate or not. But this show is all about food. So don't hesitate. 1-888-874-4888. Okay, you got that. Register for the Food Revolution Summit and call in with your questions. Terrific. Okay, now let's bring on my first guest, Deborah Vidal. And she has quite a fascinating story. And I'm just going to bring her right on, and we're going to start hearing about it. Deb, are you with us?
I'm with you. Can you hear me, Karen?
I can.
Hey, no. By the way, happy birthday, Earth Day girl.
Oh, you know, that was one of the things I wanted to talk about, and I forgot. So thank you for wishing me a birthday. I had a birthday on Earth Day. Thank you for remembering. And it was great. It's always fun having a birthday on Earth Day, because I personally do care very much about our home, planet Earth. And it's hurtful sometimes to see what we do to this planet. But I remain optimistic and hopeful. But it was Passover, the first night of Passover. I'm not a religious person, but my family does get together, and we go through what people traditionally do on the Jewish holiday of Passover, which makes it a little challenging when it comes to eating, because there's things that you're not supposed to eat. But I brought along some of our greatest recipes. We have a vegan gefilte fish. It was a hit. Everybody liked it. Made from almonds, and my favorite flourless chocolate cake. So I had a great birthday, and thanks for your good wishes.
You're welcome.
All right. Now, you started out as a professional golfer.
Yeah, that was, we can go back just a little further. I was actually, I'll call myself a vegetarian, although I wasn't a kid that liked milk. I hated milk and butter and eggs and mayo and all that stuff. But I loved animals. And I think for me, I would say it was all about the animals. And I was a vegetarian and kind of resisted meat since I was about 10. And when I played the tour, at the age of 23, I had only played golf for 3 years and was amazingly fast at getting good, and just got on the tour in 3 years was probably, I think I was the only vegetarian vegan out there.
You know, I just want to back up a little bit. I'm rereading the bio you sent me that's on our website. And you mentioned you had a terrible accident in 11 where you died and were resuscitated back to life. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So at 11, I loved my horse, and he was a very big, powerful horse. I'm 6 feet tall now, so I was always a tall, lanky kid. And I was taking a lesson, doing a exercise where you don't have a saddle on, and a motorcycle came by and he bucked me off, and I went up in the air like 3 revolutions and landed on my tailbone and slammed my head back on the ground. And wow. it was very, it changed my life in many ways, because I actually came out of my body and watched them resuscitate me. Couldn't understand why nobody could hear me when I was trying to tell them that I was okay. And since that time, I've read many books about other people who's experienced the same thing. And I see now that my experience was not so unusual. I learned that at about the age 17 when I went to Catholic school. A priest gave me a book to read about that experience. And I learned that it wasn't so unusual that other people have had the same thing. But it changed my life in many ways, because I was left with a horrible injury, and at the age of 11, I had horrible headaches that I really honestly thought I would never live to be very old, because it was so intense, my headaches. I would just like vomit sometimes all day for many days in a row. And that's what got me on my health search, actually, was trying to heal myself from those headaches. So I've been into health and food since I was 11.
Wow. Okay, so now let's go back to golf.
Yeah, and so golf starts for me way after that. I was an athlete. I played softball. I was a great softball player. Played tennis. I was the state champion in tennis. I played doubles and was the state champion in tennis. And I played against Andre Agassi's sister, because I grew up in Las Vegas. And all of my friends never hit a golf ball. And I go to college at UNLV in Las Vegas. They don't even have a ladies golf team. I'd never played. And one day my dad, who's an ophthalmologist, goes to Hawaii with my mom for this eye meeting. And I go with him, and all his doctor friends are like, "Hey, Deb, come out and play golf with us." And I'm like, "Golf? That's such a dumb sport. No way. And I go, to the beach, or I'm doing this." And they talked me into doing it. And I just gave it the no shoes, no tan line theory. Put your hands on like a baseball bat and let it rip. And I had a blast. And 3 years later, I was on the tour.
Wow. Yeah. That's amazing.
Looking back, I can appreciate what I did a lot more now than when you're in the moment.
That's interesting. Well, what did you appreciate about that you didn't recognize in the moment?
Well, I think when you can look back, you realize how hard golf really is, because I've taught and tried to, and help others. That's what I do a couple days a week to help people and make some extra money. And I just see like some very talented athletic people and how hard the golf swing really is. But also when you're in that moment of grinding and you're one of the best, like, I was top 40 in the world, and it never feels like good enough. So you're always like setting your goals higher, higher, higher. So you always are kind of in some ways feeling like you're failing. But when you can step back from it, when you step back from it, you can say like, wow, that was pretty incredible. I was really the player that came out there that became a professional golfer with the least amount of experience ever. And it's still never been done that fast. And to me, that was almost an excuse to say that, because I still felt like I should have won, and I still felt like I could have been number one. And so all that didn't matter. That was like, don't even tell me that. I'm not playing well enough, or I should be doing better. Or I expected so much out of myself that it made it really difficult.
This is something that plagues just about everyone. And we're talking about food, and food is related to this too, but even the greatest stars or the most beautiful people, pageant winners, they all feel like it's not enough. We all feel like whatever we do is not good enough.
That's true. And if you relate it to food, Karen, look at people who are on diets or, you know, their lifestyle. Some people like beat themselves up with one little mistake and then they go off the train when they could have just, you know, forgave themselves and continued. And so perfectionism, you know, or high expectations, when it gets out of balance, it doesn't matter whether it's in your business or your career or your sport or your relationship, it's a problem. And after I left the tour, and we can talk about that, I became a homeopath. And one of the great things about homeopathy is you deal with an illness by taking the whole story into consideration. And so when I started playing golf on the tour, I started becoming sick because there's so many pesticides used on the courses.
Yeah, and can we stop right there? Let's just focus on that for a moment, because that is huge. And I don't know that how many people realize this because it's not talked about enough, but most golf courses are just toxic wasteland. I mean, they look beautiful and they're green, but they're filled with toxic chemicals.
Absolutely. Completely toxic environment. And I didn't relate the two together because I started getting sinus infections and then chronically one after another, after another, after another. And I'm a very sensitive person, like growing up, because I had these headaches. Any smell would give me a headache. Chocolate would give me a headache. So suddenly I'm out there with all these pesticides and I just started getting sicker and sicker and sicker. And it's kind of what led me to homeopathy, is that I got cured by homeopathy by seeing a homeopath in Boulder, Colorado. And so it showed me the power of a homeopathic remedy. But the thing that I wanted to tell you is part of the remedy that she gave me had to do with being a perfectionist also. Do you see? Because you're using the whole person's constitution. That's what I loved about homeopathy. I sat with this lady for 2 hours and she maybe asked me 3 questions about my sinus infections, but it was all about, like, have you experienced any grief, any losses? And I had lost my sister, and she would say, like, and how did that feel? And how is it for golf? And why do you like it? And why is it difficult for you? And how do you do it? And then when I started talking about my personality like that, she honed in on the remedy, and literally I took that remedy, and within a few months, I never had another sinus infection, and I still to this day have it. And I was getting them every 6 weeks for 5 years, couldn't stop them. So it's powerful when you treat the whole body.
It's powerful when you treat the whole body, and that means the whole physical body, that means the whole emotional body, that means the environment that body is in. It all relates to our health and well-being, and you have to consider all of that if you want to heal, especially from some kind of crisis illness.
Exactly. And our founder, Dr. Samuel Hahnemann, he always said you have to remove the cause. So when I treat people, I've been in a practice for 17 years treating patients, and when they're not willing to remove their coffee or their pizza or their crap junk food or their processed food, and they want to take a little pellet on their tongue and get better, I always say, like, you know, it can maybe help your symptoms, but you're not removing the cause because you're just eating toxic crap and you're feeding your body just total crap. So that's what got me, you know, treating the whole person, which included their lifestyle, like offering advice to try to get them to move to a plant-based vegan diet and to try to get them off all this crap food and coffee because they're just burning out their adrenals, not sleeping and eating crap food. And this is most of the world today runs on fake fuel like this. It's really sad.
Yeah. Now, how does homeopathy work?
Okay, that's a good question. It's a very diluted medicine, so it's why scientists and doctors hate homeopathy, because it starts out, first thing I want to say is that I started a podcast, it's called Vidal Speaks, and episode number 4, I explain it in detail. So if any of the listeners out there want to really understand it, it's a great little podcast that I did specifically for that. But the gist of it is that you start out with a substance that can be a poison, a plant, a mineral, a substance. It doesn't mean that it's non-toxic when it starts, but you dilute it out like one drop into 100 drops of water. And then they perform this slamming of the vial against the palm of the hand, which is called succussions. And in that process of succussing the remedy, the water molecules take on like a photographic memory of the original substance. Mm. So after they hit that or succuss that 100 times, they then take one drop of that vial and put it into another empty vial and add 99 drops of water into it and succuss it another 100 times. And when they do that 30 times, they now have a potency that you will find in whole foods that's called 30C. And 30C means that it's been diluted 30 times. But 30C is more powerful than 6C because in between each of those dilutions, they've succussed or hit that vial 100 times, and that's what's making it stronger. So it's a system of medicine that's extremely dilute but very powerful in energy because of the succussions. And therefore, you can treat pregnant women, old people, animals, and without harmful side effects. That's what's so fantastic about it. Whereas herbs, it's natural medicine, but herbs have side effects and they can have contraindications with other drugs. Homeopathy doesn't have any of that.
Well, I believe that as we get better at seeing things at a microscopic level that we're starting to do, and at nanometer levels, we'll be able to put more science behind homeopathy. I think that's where a lot of conventional doctors today are hesitant to get involved with it because they're waiting for reviewed, critical, published research that
supports and it's hard to do that because to do double-blind placebo studies or, you know, you have to say like you have to take 20 kids with ear infections. But you see, if five of those kids with the ear infection all have different behaviors, because a child with an ear infection might have it in the right ear or the left. That's a different remedy. They might be wanting attention from mom and be cuddly and have mom hold them. And the other kid might be irritable and grumpy. And those are different remedies. So it's really hard to do these trials because you're treating the individual person and you can't just throw one remedy at all 20 kids.
And that is another problem with our medical system, because we want to find a one-size-fits-all. It's really expensive to do any kind of research, and that means the research that is done is really simplified and not duplicating the real world or the real picture. And we all do need to be treated individually because we're individuals.
Yep, you have to treat. I mean, you know, some old systems of medicine, homeopathy is from the 1700s. So, you know, if they've been trying to attack it for all these hundreds of years, it must have some merit, right? And the reason that doctors don't like it, my dad's a doctor, and it took him a really long time because he would keep saying to me, like, I don't get it. How can it be more diluted and become stronger? And I said, you have to turn off your doctor mind, and you have to think of it as the succussions that are making it stronger. And in between every dilution, you're having a 100 succussions. So it's 100 times 100 times 100. It's getting stronger as you dilute it because you're able to do more succussions. And then he finally got it. But you got to keep reminding them about that because their doctor minds aren't taught anything like that.
So well, I think the next
homeopathy stuff.
Homeopathy what?
It's hard because, you know, they fight it because, like you said, there's not just one pill fits all. And that's why I always recommend, you know, to my patients, it's like sometimes they'll say, what can I take for a backache? Well, it doesn't work like that. Tell me the specifics of your backache. Are you chilly? Are you warm? Are you grumpy? Are you wanting to be alone? Are you wanting company? You know, where's the pain? Is it going down the right leg, the left leg? What's the nature of the pain? You have to know all these things to find the right remedy. You can't just take one remedy for back pain.
Right. And it doesn't necessarily work immediately. It takes time, doesn't it?
Well, it can work very fast, like in cases of high fever, in a case of a child with an ear infection, you can give a remedy and in 10 minutes, the fever can go down. I took my fever down in a pneumonia from an 105.3 to 99 or something in a matter of 20, 30 minutes. So it can work really fast. But in chronic disease, it won't work really fast. But acutes, it can work very fast.
Right. Okay, well, I'm going to remind people that we can take calls at 1-888-874-4888. And if you're as intrigued as I am, you might have a question. So let's hear it. And you could always email me at info@realmeals.org if you're listening to this sometime in the future. Yes, Steph.
So I was going to say, too, and then regards about food, it just became, it's such a big thing. I mean, I've always been a health conscious person because I think when you grow up with serious headaches or some and physical problems of my spine and just I, you know, to be in the shape that I'm in is a miracle, really, because I could have been basically crippled from my accident. And it took me many, many years to heal my headaches, many years. And so I feel that's probably what drove me to the health conscious state. But however, it's also my life work. I'm 100% clear that I came here to help people. And it's why I recently put my practice on hold because I'm so frustrated with the state of the world. Like you were saying in your introduction, the world is sick, the planet is sick, and we're eating all these animals that's making us sick, that's making the planet sick, and people don't get it and they need to hear it. And so I felt like for 5 years I've been thinking about doing a podcast because I feel such a strong desire to get the word out, because by the time I'm getting people now in my practice, they are so sick, and it's such a long way back to health when you get to that point first. If you could just do the steps, small steps that it would take to heal some of the illness that you have before you get to that point, it'll be so much easier. And so I feel really strongly about speaking out and teaching people mainly about making better choices, because doctors are prescribing antibiotics for common colds, for ear infections that are fungal and viral and not even bacterial, that don't work, and they're ruining these kids' guts, and these waves of antibiotic are creating huge waves of illness that it's going to take us many years to overcome. And people take these pills because they believe their doctor's trying to help them, which I'm sure that's why a doctor became a doctor. But these drugs are suppressing the symptoms, and you cannot take a symptom that the body needs like that away by cutting it off with a drug, because it's just going to express in a more dangerous way.
It just gets bigger, right?
Right. Right. Now, so that's really the message that I feel like I want people to know. I'm not trying to tell people don't take an antibiotic, but I want people to know if you choose to take that antibiotic, you are still going to pay the price for it. Even if it's in a life-threatening pneumonia, it's still going to take you probably years to overcome that, the damage, what it does when you suppress a strong symptom like that. And you just need to be educated so you can make better choices, just like we do about our food. You can't just, how long can you sit there and put that crap in your body and be unconscious about what you're really feeding yourself? You know, are you going to wait for the stroke or the heart attack, or do you want to do it before and try to feel better? And that's what I try to tell people. It's really about choices, don't you think, Karen?
Absolutely. You know, I have very, very limited experience with homeopathy. I was living, but I did try it, I believe, one time. And I was living in the south of France in the early 90s. And in Europe, I think there were more opportunities back then to use homeopathy. All the pharmaceutical stores had homeopathic medicines available. Yeah. And so I got bronchitis, and it seemed when I was there, everyone was getting bronchitis. All the French were running around and going, oh, le bronchite. And I took this homeopathic treatment. It took 3 weeks.
Yeah, but some of those bronchitis might take a month or might have turned into pneumonia. So
exactly. It took a long time, but I was not going to take antibiotics.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's what it boils down to. And in our society, people can't take a day off of work. So they just do whatever they can to try to get through working instead of like going to bed and resting and having a nice bowl of miso soup and letting your immune system build up, drink some green juice or smoothie. But instead, people go to work.
And I know that's a bad part of our culture. I have a question about homeopathy and nutrition. So does a whole foods plant-based diet work with homeopathic practice?
Yeah, but I would say that it's not two separate entities, but let's put it this way. If someone's not eating a plant-based organic diet, will a remedy still work? Yeah, but my feeling is that whole food plant-based organic diets build your immune system up. And when your immune system is functioning at the best level possible, then a remedy is going to respond even faster and you're going to get less sick less often. And when you do, you'll respond better versus somebody whose digestion is so slowed down by trying to digest so much meat and protein, and then they're taking in all the, you know, bacterias and the estrogens and the chemicals from all the stuff that the cows and the chickens and all this stuff, then I think their immune system is not functioning as well. They're more toxic, I guess you could say. And so it doesn't mean their response will be not able to work, but I just feel like it's a lot more work to get them healthy.
Now, but we just have like a few minutes. So can you tell us where we can find your podcast and more information about you?
Yeah. So my podcast is called Vidal Speaks, and it's I did episode 14 in Brenda Davis. She was just my last guest. It was a great interview. So I highly recommend people check it out, because I do interviews with people that have recovered naturally with diseases such as cancer, all kinds of things. I talk to people about food. I talk to them about water, homeopaths, about health, and it's on iTunes. My website is vidalspeaks.com. Please go check it out, but it's on iTunes, and on Facebook and Twitter, I'm Vidal Speaks, so it's pretty easy that way, and you can email me if you have any questions. Just go to my website, vidalspeaks.com, and just click contact me, and you can send me an email if you have any questions, but I'd love for you guys to check out the podcast and let me know what you think.
Okay. That's awesome. Well, I loved learning all about homeopathy today and hearing your story. Thank you for sharing it with us on It's All About Food, Deborah.
Thanks, Karen. And you keep up all your good work from one vegan to another.
Woo-hoo. Thank you for tuning in love with me here on It's All About Food.
You're welcome.
Take care. Woo. Okay. So here we go. We're moving now into part two. It's part two of It's All About Food. And first, I want to remind you again to sign up for the Food Revolution Summit if you haven't done so already. And if you've been to responsibilityandliving.com, the links that weren't working are now working. Thank goodness. And also, what else did I want to remind you of? Call in questions. I want to hear them. 1-888-874-4888. Let's have a conversation. Okay, now on to T. Marie Hagenberger, who is a registered dietitian with a master's degree in public health and a nutrition professor at you'll have to tell me how to pronounce that, River College, and a professional speaker working in her community with corporate wellness clients, including her role on the worldwide wellness team for Apple. Awesome. T. Marie's got a new book out called The Foodie Bar Way, and we're going to be talking a bit about that. Welcome, T. Marie.
Hello. Yes, I'm calling from Cosumnes River College.
Cosumnes. Where is that?
Sacramento, California.
Oh, okay, I should know that. I should know about that. Cosumnes. Cosumnes.
It's a great place.
Okay.
Yes.
How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. It's my birthday. I know your birthday is Friday.
Oh,
April's
yay!
A wonderful month.
Can I sing happy birthday to you?
Oh, my goodness. I would be honored. Yes.
Okay. And I want everybody to join in because this is my special happy birthday song. Let's see. My voice isn't warmed up, but we'll see what happens. I'll do it fast. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, T. Marie. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday. Woo!
Thank you so much. That's wonderful. Yes.
Yes, I like birthdays.
I couldn't think of a better way to spend it.
Yeah, I had a really fun birthday, and I'm hoping you're having a fun birthday too.
I am. This is a highlight for me. I'm so excited to talk with you. I've been a listener and podcast follower of yours for years and years. I was so excited to be able to meet you at Berkeley's Earth Day a couple of years ago. So this is kind of just full circle.
Yeah, well, it's exciting when we're passionate about something and you meet and connect with others who are passionate, and somehow that passion grows exponentially, and now you're doing all kinds of wonderful things.
I know. I feel so fortunate, so lucky. This adventure with my book has been a really interesting step because I've been teaching at the college level nutrition for, I'm going on year 17. And this is sharing with people my work in a different way. It's just fantastic. My students would often say, well, I just wish that you could come home with me. If I could live at your house, then I would eat the way that you eat. I would get all the nutrients that you get. But I can't, you know, I said, well, you can't come home with me. But now I can send a little bit of me home with them. And so that's been really exciting because the feedback has been so positive, and it just warms my heart. And I tell my students, keep sending emails, keep letting me know what you're making. And even last night I got a picture of one of the recipes, the scrambled tacos, from a student. And her dad had come to a presentation on campus. She brought her dad. I always encourage students to bring family members. And he came along, and it was fantastic. And then I got this email, my dad and I loved it. This was wonderful. It just warms my heart.
I totally understand. Now, let's back up a little bit. You've been teaching nutrition for 17 years.
Yes.
And have you eating the plant-based foodie bar way all those 17 years?
No. I actually was omnivore. Interestingly enough, we had a foodie bar for our wedding 16 years ago. We didn't necessarily think of it as a foodie bar, but we did a pasta bar because we had been to so many weddings and were so disappointed with the food that we wanted everybody to have their own customized pasta. And so we had all the ingredients set out, and we had several sauces, and we had several of the pastas, and then the chefs just put the combinations together as people requested, and everybody walked away from the table with a perfect bowl of pasta for them. And that went over so well that we had kept doing that at home. But about, I think I'm going on year six now of whole food plant-based, completely 100%. And that, so as soon as I made that transition, then I couldn't teach anything else. I mean, I there's no way that I can provide recommendations for my students or anyone else in the world that I don't feel with all of my heart, you know, is the best for them. So it's obviously up to them whether they take my advice, but at least on my end of it, then I need to be true to what I know. And so that was a transition because, as you can imagine, the textbooks are not vegetarianism is a tiny little piece of the protein chapter with big words usually of caution, at least historically, been hit. So I present the information, you know, that the textbook has, and then I give them, now that's one side, and then let's give you the whole picture. And then so I provide all of the information that I have access to about the plant-based piece of it, And the behind-the-scenes research, Dr. Greger's videos play a huge role in my classes because they're short, but they are all research, so it works phenomenally. They don't want to just hear from me that, you know, this that dairy does X, Y, or Z to people. So I provide that, and then I give them challenges, including the 21-day kickstart, PCRM. I started doing that several years ago, and I didn't expect much of a response. I didn't want to set it out there with these gigantic expectations, you know, where you get all this, you know, tons of extra credit. I actually made it pretty small. I did 15 points of extra credit for 1,000 points over the semester. So it had to be people who really wanted to do it. And interestingly enough, the first year that I did it, over 2 months, I expected to have maybe 15 or 20 students, and I had 130.
Wow, good for you. Yay!
Oh,
that's wonderful.
Oh, it was. And so what it spurred in me was actually several different things. One, I started a chartered club on campus called TOP, which is Thrive on Plants. And I wanted a place for my students to feel comfortable being plant, completely 100% plant-based, or plant curious, or somewhere in the middle. And so our little mission is to help us fulfill our potential by making plant-based whole food choices, joyful movement, participating in joyful movement, mindful practices, and lifelong learning. And so we have been growing, and we, you know, started with the logo and those types of things. And then this year, we did something that was just amazing. We just finished up with 2 weeks of Your Fork, Our Planet, which, you know, I dream up these things between running down the street and flossing my teeth, you know, and helping my kids with homework. But we showed Cowspiracy several times on campus, and then I had Dr. Openlander do a Skype question and answer, and then we had Lanny Mulrath do a presentation of 5 steps to a sustainable plate. And then on the Wednesday of the second week, we took over our quad area, and our top club set out 10 tables that taught students how to be more self-sustainable. So we had everything from what to do with a rice cooker besides cook rice, how to use a crock pot to cook while you're sleeping or working, how to save water with your fork, how to make dressings and sauces with your blender, all those types of different things for students, how to save money at the grocery store. And everything was 100% plant-based, all the recipes we gave out. I was so proud of them. It was just phenomenal. My students that had walked around, I asked them, so did you learn anything? And they said, oh, my goodness, we learned so much. This was incredible. So we're going to start doing that every semester and have that top tips on the quad to have students connect with their power to really take back their health.
Very often, especially on Earth Day, when we're talking about climate change and the environment and the things that people can do, we always hear the same recycled, useless, well, not useless, but not the most powerful information, like using energy efficient light bulbs and making sure you turn off the water while you're brushing your teeth or when you're putting creams in your hair or in the shower or something. These things are okay, but they're not going to have the impact as eating plant foods versus animal foods on our water supply.
Right. No, and people are just unaware. They just don't have that understanding. And so then to bring the piece together where, okay, now what can you do and how can you become more self-sustainable? Because I do see that as a theme with my students where they get the environment piece and they appreciate that maybe even more so than some of the other generations through, you know, different times in the world. But they also really want to be able to take care of themselves. And so to be able to do that and to find those answers within themselves is fantastic. So it was interesting because I was listening to your interview with Deborah, and she was talking about dealing with health issues later in life. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, worked in the hospital as a dietitian when I first started working. And that's why I left the hospital, because my impact was so muted, because it was such a, you know, after the patient already had 7.3 diseases, you know, and I'm talking to them about the renal diet because their kidneys have just failed, where I thought, no, I have to be able to make an impact earlier. And so when I started teaching, I still get goosebumps when I'm talking to you about that, because that gives me so much joy to be able to get to students at this point in their life and a lot of people may think, well, they think they're invincible. You know, I mean, they're 18 years old. Mm-hmm. And some of them do, but you know what I found is they're really concerned about their parents. Mm-hmm. And if it's not themselves, then they're coming to me going, okay, we were in the emergency room last night because my dad's blood pressure spiked and he was in a hypertensive crisis. And then, you know, they'll say, but he's kind of old. I'm like, okay, like, how old are you talking? Well, he's like 48. I'm looking at them saying, right, oh, sweetheart, no, this is way too young, you know, to have these issues. So I find them motivated, frustrated with the resistance that they're getting from their parents, interestingly mm-hmm. enough, when they bring the information home. But then we just talked about the idea where I said, you just have to show them. You show them with your actions. You don't try to tell your parents what to do and what they're doing is wrong. You know, you show them how good you feel. You know, you're making these changes, and then they may come around. I had a student who did this quote, and I'll never forget it. Do it for yourself, show enjoyment, and be willing to share. And mm-hmm. for them, it can start with them instead of just trying to get home and convince everybody in the household that this is what everybody should be doing. You know,
well, I love what you're doing, and those students are so lucky to have you, and all classes in nutrition should be the way you described it. And in hospitals, were you still an omnivore when you were a dietitian in the hospital?
I was. Absolutely. Yeah, that was a long time ago. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, that's one of the things that frustrates me. I spent some time in a hospital, and I've visited other people who are in hospitals. And in New York, it's getting a little better. Mm-hmm. But I felt like I knew so much more than the dietitians that were in the hospital when it came to nutrition. And then the other thing that just makes my brain want to explode is the food that they serve cancer patients, cancer-causing foods to cancer patients. They give mm-hmm. Heart disease causing arteriosclerosis growing foods to coronary heart disease patients. It just what they're doing is they're creating return customers.
Well, and it's just a huge disconnect. I mean, there's mm-hmm. it's just this lack of understanding and willingness to be open to new information and information that's contrary to what we've been learning. And I do, I tell my students, because they all come to me thinking that this is what they've been raised is how. That's just their reality. And, you know, I tell them I wasn't born into this. I learned this after I had already been through all my schooling and I had already been teaching. I said, but mm-hmm. it's kind of like the world. People used to think that the world was flat and we now know it's round. And I said, but there are still people that meet the Flat Earth Society. They still have meetings. I just don't go. So that's okay. You know, that we just need to be open to not always having the answers that we've always had and go with the information that makes sense to us and makes sense to our bodies. My students, I mean, one thing that nobody can argue with is that they've never felt better. And we're talking about someone who isn't 75 years old with 12 diseases. We're talking about an 18-year-old who says, I've never, ever felt better than when I've switched over to eating 100% plant-based. And so there's no arguing with that at all, which just makes me smile because that I even, it was kind of crazy. I have to share this with you. Yesterday in class, I had a student who said, so because our 21-day kickstart ended, you know, on the 21st, so I said, I had one of my students, he said, okay, and he's has a Hispanic background and traditional family, and he said, so after the 21-day kickstart, and he said this in front of the whole class, he said, I was done. So I'd been craving meat. And so he said, so I went to Texas Roadhouse, which is this crazy chain here in Sacramento. It's all over. And he said, and I ordered ribs. He said, and I couldn't eat them. I said, what do you mean? Well, it happened. And he said, well, they came and I looked at them on my plate and he said, I couldn't do it. He said, I didn't want them. And I said, I said, so what did you do? He said, well, I just asked for a to-go container and I took it home. And he said, and I think he said he gave it to his dog. And I said, and then I came in with, well, you know, there is vegan dog food. I said, but that's a whole nother discussion. I said, so what you're telling me here, I said, I can't give this to people. I said, if I could give this to people, you don't understand how excited that makes me. I said, not only could you have it, because I tell my students, I want to move you from I can't have it to I don't want it. Mm. Whatever it is, whether it's soda, whatever it is.
And it's so, not deprivation.
Exactly. So he said, oh, no. I said, because you could have had it. He said, not only could I have had it, I bought it. He said, I spent money on it. It was sitting in front of me. I mean, and this, it was not cheap. He said, and it was in front of me, and he said, nope, I'm done. I'm done with it. And I thought, this is why I came to work today. You know, it's just like, wow. Oh my gosh, that is golden for me. I mean, because my teacher said I shouldn't be eating this. That is not how it works. It needs to be from them. And so those kinds of responses are really, really important to me. And interestingly enough, I had mentioned to you yesterday in class, when I asked my students why being healthy was important to them, that was one of the things I have them do journaling and things like that. And more often than not, when a gentleman in class, and they're all young, raised his hand to share in front of the whole class, it was, I want to be there for my kids. And I always ask, well, do you have kids? No, not yet, but when I do. And I thought, nice, thank you for stepping up and thinking about the future. So that gives me so much hope. I am hopeful beyond any doubt because I see the power with these students and the potential that they can have on their own family's health and then that ripple effect that, you know, goes out into the world. Mm. So,
what a great story. Now, you have a book called The Foodie Bar Way. Let's dig into it.
Yes, I love this. This is so fun. So my students typically come to me without any experience cooking. Not only do they not have experience, but they tell me they have no money. You know, they spend their money on fast food and cell phones. And then they also tell me that they just don't have confidence because their parents didn't cook. Mm-hmm. So I spend a lot of my time in class talking about cooking. And I always, you know, say it doesn't matter how many milligrams of or micrograms of folate you find in asparagus. If the way you cook it is stringy and nasty, nobody's going to eat it. So, we talk about making soup then. You know, do not serve vegetables that have not been treated well to people. But I always want to give them ideas. So I had a student actually who a couple semesters ago said, that's it. She said, you need to just write your book. And I said, well, what do you mean? She said, okay, I go to your website, I print out all your recipes, then someone comes over, they eat your food, and they take all the recipes. And she said, I printed these out 3 times. I'm done. She said, just write your book. So in between, again, brushing my teeth, flossing my teeth, and running down the street and grading papers, I wrote The Foodie Bar Way. So it is a collection of bars. So my friends and students, you know, always ask me, how do you do it? You don't miss a beat. Since we've switched over to and transitioned over to 100% plant-based, I have not had any missteps going backwards. And mm-hmm. I try to do everything possible to make things from scratch, but I'm also really busy. So the way that I do it is I set up bars at home. I have two kids. I have a 9 and a 12-year-old. And I make the components typically over the weekend or during the week, depending on what's going on. And then when everybody gets home, they customize whatever they want. So if it's a baked potato bar, or if it's a pizza bar or a pasta bar. So we have all of the different ingredients ready to go, and then everybody can customize. Because you make something, you know, one day and olives are great, and then the next day the kids don't want olives. You know, I mean, it just so I do not want to throw any food away, and so it drives me crazy. So if we keep this kind of separate, then it makes it easy. And the way that I, with my students in mind, the way that I decided to do it was each bar has a basic bar and then a raising the bar section. So with my students in mind, or just when it's really busy, you just need the basics. It could be something as simple, you know, as a roasted baked potato where you eat the skin and you have a can of chili beans that, of course, has no animal products, and then some greens and some avocado on top, just something very basic. Or raising the bar, you would make my seasoned black beans, or you would put my 2-minute collard greens on top, or my garlic mushrooms. And so that way you can, if you have time or you want to start experimenting, you can upgrade some of those ingredients and maybe even play with something like a purple sweet potato. You know, we have those at our fantastic farmers markets. So that is the idea. And then after each bar, there is an example of how we do the bar at home, because I still have students and people who want a specific recipe. So it turned out to be 94 recipes and 32 bars, and the response has been fantastic, because it really kind of just meets you where you are, whether you want to spend some extra time or whether you just need to be quick. It works really well for kids, too, because you can bring them along as a little team member, helping you prepare some of the different components, and then they get the autonomy of choosing their favorites from what's offered.
I just had a very silly thought, and I'm going to apologize before I say it.
Okay,
I will break myself. You said you have 94 recipes in 32 bars.
Yes.
And it sounded like a song to me, like you were singing the 94 recipe titles in 32 bars of music. Maybe you should do that.
Oh, yes. Maybe I should. I never thought that it would be that many recipes. But when I started putting those bars together, I thought, well, oh, and then this would be good. And I want my Power Pesto, and I want this one, and I want that one. So it just ended up being huge. And my husband took all the pictures. My husband and our friend, a photography professor here at school, Catherine Mayo. So between the two of us, or three of us, we took all the pictures. And my students also say, I need a picture for every recipe. So we have them. So it's fun. It's 300 pages. I never thought in my wildest dreams that it would be that big. I'm very proud of it. Thank you.
Well done. Now, okay, if you're not getting this, listeners, dear listeners, this woman is a very happy, energetic, bubbly individual and passionate about what she does and is bringing the light and the love to plant-based eating. And it all comes out in her book. It's a very happy, just have fun when you're eating kind of book, right?
Yes. And it's something that I want people to not feel intimidated if you don't have an ingredient. That's what the bars are set up for. Just use something else in the list. You know, it's very approachable. And it keeps things exciting and not boring, because you can keep changing things up. And so the subtitle is, so it's The Foodie Bar Way, one meal, lots of options, everyone's happy. And I really feel like there's so much discussion now about being divided over what to eat. I don't like this, and I'm, you know, if someone's gluten-free or if someone doesn't do dairy or these types of things, that this is really a way to bring people back to the table and to share one meal together. Even though everybody's plate may look a little different, that we're all sharing the same meal. And I don't think that that can be under or overestimated, the value of that, because that is something that we've lost to a certain extent in our society, is that connectedness around food and around just being connected at mealtimes and taking the time to be mindful instead of just being distracted with media or, you know, what have you. So this really, it's been great. I had a student who wrote a review in our little local newspaper and said that in her house, this is a quote from her, "Living in a household where we are polar opposites when it comes to healthy eating, I found the book to be extremely useful in stifling complaints from either side." So that's huge. I mean,
I can't believe we're at the end of the program, and it's really been great speaking with you. I'm just more excited listening to you talk now than when I was flipping through the book, which I already love. So thank you very much for joining me and for doing all the wonderful work that you're doing. It's just incredible.
Thank you. Thank you. And one last thing, we are starting a plant-based nutrition and sustainable agriculture certificate program at our college. I am just thrilled. We got that through curriculum, which is huge.
Yes, very good. I'm applauding you here, and everyone else should. You are amazing. Thank you for being on the planet.
Thank you.
And happy birthday. Let's celebrate you, T. Marie.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you again for joining me. We just have like a minute left, and I wanted to mention, if you go to responsibilityandliving.com, that's where I live, I have a couple of brand new recipes. One of them is so easy, and I've just been like nuts over it. We juiced fresh ginger, and we made like a cup of ginger juice. It's really hot, really spicy. Diluted it 4-1 and froze this mixture into cubes. I'm putting these ginger ice cubes in everything and loving it. So it was really worth the time to do that. Visit responsibilityandliving.com and find out about that. And that's it. All you have to do now is have a delicious week. Thanks for tuning in love with me. I'm Karen Hartglass, and you've been listening to It's All About Food. Bye-bye. We'll be right back.